You're listening to The Point. Imagine not being able to zip a jacket, hold a spoon, or wash your hand. Imagine painful muscle spasms that prevent routine activities. For millions of people living with neurological disorders, this is a reality, and it's due to a condition called spasticity. Joining us to talk more about spasticity and treatment option is Dr. Scott Abramson, specialist in physical medicine and rehabilitation at Spalding Rehabilitation. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Barbara Kimmey's a physical therapist specializing in neurorehabilitation, also at Spalding. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so what is spasticity and how does it present itself?
Spasticity is a condition that it's sort of an unwanted contraction of a muscle. So if somebody who has had a stroke or a brain injury or a spinal cord injury, sometimes their brain can't shut down or turn down the pathways that are making certain muscles contract. So they may have this injury, and then their arm, their leg, their foot may get stuck in a certain position from spasticity.
Mm. So it can be painful then?
It can be painful. It can cause major disruptions in life, inability, as you said, to zip a jacket, to get dressed, to bathe, to do your hygiene. So it can interfere pretty much in all parts of life.
And does it happen anywhere in the body? Are there some general areas that you'd see it more than others?
So there are certain types of patterns that people have evolved in. So oftentimes you may see what we call a flexion pattern, where the arm gets stuck in a certain position where sort of the elbow is flexed, like in a biceps type of position, biceps muscle contraction. We see it in the foot, where the foot is sort of pushed down towards the ground. Sometimes a clenched fist, the hand gets stuck and stuck in like a ball type of position, and so you can't even get your fingers open to clean inside of the hand.
Mm. So people with neurological disorders commonly associated with spasticity are probably more readily diagnosed and treated, right? But are there instances that people go for years undiagnosed, and what would be some of those reasons?
Oftentimes, it's not a well-known condition in the medical community, so we're trying to bring the message out to not only the primary care physicians in the community, but to the home care providers, and just bring the message out to the population that there is something that can be done for it, and it's something that we do need to recognize and just not say, hey, this is part of the disease, but there are treatment options for it.
Yeah, I would say I hadn't heard of it before we started talking about this. So your approach to treating this is a combination then of both medicine and rehabilitation?
That's correct. What we often do is, and what we work in at the Spalding Clinics, is try to work as a team, and we try to figure out different options from very conservative approaches from a rehabilitation standpoint, and that's why Barb is here with us today to help from a physical therapy standpoint, different exercises, stretching, splinting type of interventions. And then my approach where I'll fit in is sort of oversee what's happening from a team perspective, but then look at different medications and sometimes injections that can be helpful as well.
Right. Before we get to that, Barbara, talk a little bit about the physical therapy portion of the rehabilitation.
Well, when people have spasticity, their muscles, as Scott mentioned, become very tight, and they can't perform things such as walking, getting up, transfer stairs. And by using stretching and teaching the patient and the caregiver, we can move those joints so they can perform various activities.
Mm-hmm. So is it a joint thing, or is it the muscles around, or is it both?
The muscles around the joint.
The joints. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a problem in your hand, like you're saying, with this clenched hand, and you can't open it, so you would be doing some kind of therapy opening and closing kind of a thing? Or?
Typically, occupational therapists work with the hands, and physical therapists typically work with the legs, but there are crossovers. So let's talk about the legs. With if your leg is bent up so that you can't put your heel down, imagine walking on tiptoes. That's painful.
Sure.
That's not functional. It's energy zapping. Mm-hmm. And so we will stretch, use heat, massage, stretch those muscles.
Yeah. Botox, when we hear Botox, you immediately think of cosmetic applications. What is Botox and what does it do to the muscles?
Botox, it's sort of a muscle relaxer, a very potent muscle relaxer. So if you think of Botox, its origin is from botulism. Mm-hmm. And so botulism is a bacteria that is poisonous and can, in large doses, can be lethal. So many years ago, not many years ago, but back in the 1980s, it was recognized in the medical community that if they purify small amounts of this botulism and they then inject it into certain muscles that have this spasticity or these unwanted contractions, that you can actually relax that muscle. And so in the late 1980s, 1989, it got its first FDA approval to actually treat strabismus, which is a muscle disorder in the eye. Then it got approved later on to treat a condition called dystonia. And dystonia is a certain type of unwanted contraction of muscles in the neck, like we talk about torticollis, mm-hmm. or people get writer's cramp. And then shortly thereafter, it started to find more uses in people with spasticity, which is sort of a cousin of dystonia. It's, mm-hmm. again, unwanted muscle contractures from these certain diseases that we talked about. So through the 1990s and up until today, we've been sort of improving upon its use in terms of treating these types of conditions. So everybody thinks of Botox for cosmesis purposes, mm-hmm. and that's where it really has its national recognition. So when I bring it up in the clinic to a patient and say, oh, we could use Botox to help you, you get the double raised eyebrows. And yeah. what are you talking about? And then we always get the joke, oh, take care of these wrinkles at the same time. But the use is actually quite effective. Cause what we can do is when we assess the patient through my own assessment in the office or input from the therapist, Barb may send a patient down to me and say, Mrs. So-and-so is having difficulty with this muscle in their leg, and if we can sort of relax that muscle and even it out, her gait will be so mm-hmm. much better. And that's what our goal is, to try to isolate certain muscles.
But, of course, the Botox wears off, right? It's permanent.
Correct. Yeah. So the Botox, it lasts about 3 months. And so on average, patients will sort of fall in that ballpark. But what we can tell people, and if people have had excellent experience with it, they'll say, sure, I'll come in 4 times a year, I'll get my injection, I don't have to use medications, I can really become much more functional.
So there's no cure for spasticity, right? That's so patients have to get these repeated. Do you have it in this, like, once you have it, say it's in your leg or your hand or your arm, wherever, do you always have it in that same spot, or does it move around?
Typically, the spasticity will come back to the same area. But sometimes we'll get, in some patients that I've seen through the years, that I may inject somebody, and then through a combination with they continue with their therapy, they continue with exercises, they get some natural recovery as well. Some of the strength that is opposing that muscle that's getting contracted or spastic starts to get stronger. Mm. And so the spasticity may not come back as intense or as bad in the future. So sometimes you can sort of break through that cycle, particularly if you catch them early enough.
Yeah. So Barbara, it's really the physical therapy part then is really important, because you've got the Botox in there that's relaxing the muscle.
Correct.
And then your job then is to try to strengthen that muscle, right?
And that's what's wonderful working at Spalding, where the physiatrist may inject the muscle, and within a couple of days you can get some response, but 2 weeks or so is the perfect time to really get in there, get the family and everyone involved with a home program and stretching and strengthening the opposing muscles.
Right. We're talking about using Botox to treat spasticity. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to chime in, is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So diagnosing spasticity can be difficult, right? We said earlier people just think the pain is something that they have to live with. Primary care physicians might not have experience with the symptoms. So are there efforts to better educate the primary care physicians as well as the general public about what this is and what it looks like?
Sure. We've done a lot in terms of trying to bring this out to the community. It's something I've been doing in my practice for 15 years, and sometimes we get patients that come in and we may recognize it, or they may be in for a different condition, and I may pick up on it, and they say, wow, I've been living with that for 5 or 10 years and had no idea that something could be done for it. So we're trying to bring the message out more so to the community, but also sending out different informational packets to the primary cares and sort of say, hey, there is something that we can do here.
Yeah. So what would be the, is it one of those things that if you get the symptoms earlier, it's easier to treat than if you know you have it for 5 years? You're both nodding your head. So yes. It's good to get early diagnosis.
Without a doubt, the significant part here is to prevent that spasticity to turn into what we call contracture. So if that muscle is spastic and it's continuously acting on a joint, eventually that joint is going to shorten in length and it's going to get tighter and tighter to the point that the tendons and the ligaments that are there are getting tighter and tighter. So some people will progress to the point that they have what's called a contracture, and the contracture is that joint that you can't open anymore because the soft tissues around it have become so tight. And at that point in time, what we do becomes very, very difficult and almost sometimes impossible. that we're then sending patients on for surgical intervention to try to release those tendons that have become contracted. So our goal is really to get the message out to the home care community, to the physicians, and to the public, and say, this is something that needs to be treated before you get to that point. Mm-hmm.
And so what actually causes it? We mentioned sometimes stroke victims are neurological disorders, but what causes that to happen? I mean, you said something in the brain, doesn't it?
Correct. So the part of the what we call the upper motor neuron system, that's the brain and the spinal cord, that part that got damaged with whatever the initial injury was.
So you require some damage.
It requires damage, and then it can't shut down the opposing the signals that are coming down. So you lose that ability to the inhibition of certain muscles to fire. So some muscles are firing nonstop, and it's just a muscle that's going uncontrollably at that point.
Yeah. So if you haven't had any damage like a stroke or a neurological disorder, you're not likely to get this then?
It would be impossible.
Impossible. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you've had that and you're noticing that you've got some issues with this muscle, but is it painful to start? I mean, or is it just like all of a sudden you can't open? I mean, is it gradual? How do you know? What are the beginning symptoms, so to speak?
Typically tightness. You may feel a stiffness, loss of range of motion, and more difficulty just performing your day-to-day activities where you or a caregiver may be trying to help you get dressed, and you all of a sudden you know that I can't open my hand or I can't move my shoulder in a certain position and get my jacket on or my shirt on.
So varying degrees, obviously, then, of spasticity, right?
Correct.
So people who go for years, as we're talking about, not being diagnosed, they can be fairly severe. So what are the treatment options in these instances? A little Botox is probably not going to work. Are there pumps implanted, do I understand? That's one of the options?
So pumps implanted, but that's actually in some more advanced cases. And what happens with the pumps is that you may have somebody who's typically in a population like cerebral palsy, where they have significant spasticity involving the legs and or the arms, and so it involves multiple limbs, or people have MS, same thing, involves multiple limbs. In those cases, we can't Botox everything. Mm-hmm. It would be too dangerous, too lethal to put those levels of Botox in, and oftentimes the therapy and the medications are helpful, but not enough to control it. So those people will have a pump implanted of a medicine called baclofen. And baclofen is one of the medications that we use orally. If you use too much orally to control spasms, sedation, confusion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you can put the pump in that directly goes into the spine, and it delivers a small amount of that medication to help try to control the spasticity. And that then, so that we work in tandem with some of the physicians that implant them. And then we at our clinic will help try to, with the patient, control the amount of medication that goes in. We can program it, and we use a programmer, and we can sort of dial in how much or little the medicine goes in.
Oh, technology, huh? So you do that with a computer then?
So we do it with it's controlled almost like a pacemaker, but we can sort of it's got an internal computer, and we can sort of program it from the outside, from the surface, and tell it we'd like to deliver X amount of medication throughout the day, and give certain doses at certain times of the day when the spasticity may be worse, so we can sort of program it through all those different levels.
So it's different times of the day, it can be. What would cause that? Why would it be just you're moving all day and that's
sometimes sometimes you're over fatigued or spastic more at night. Some people, they have their spasticity throughout the day, but they're distracted, they're doing other things, and it's not as bothersome. They get into bed, they go to sleep, and then it's just uncontrollable spasticity. So we can dial up the medication to deliver a higher dose at nighttime and then lower it during the daytime. So there's all different ways that we can do that.
Is the pain involved in this, like having a spasm, is it that kind of a pain that we're talking about?
It could be either or. You can get sort of intermittent, sort of occasional spasms that are bothersome, and then some people it's just sort of a nonstop around the clock.
Oh my goodness, that
spasms.
Sounds awful painful. We're talking about spasticity with Dr. Scott Abramson and Barbara Kimmy, physical therapist, both from Spalding Rehabilitation. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. If you have a comment or a question, you can send us an email as well, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We're going to talk more after a short break.
I'm Ira Glass, urging you to listen to This American Life, the only radio program that dares to answer the age-old question, what if Billie Holiday had recorded commercials?
I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony.
Ever exploring new territory for radio, go out of your way for it. This American Life from Public Radio International. Saturday at noon and Sunday night at 6 here on WCAI.
We also have an added broadcast of This American Life now Wednesday afternoons at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, its name is Banana Cream Pie from the colors, so I fondly refer to it as my banana cream.
Glenn Carless of Falmouth in his 1964 Mini.
Whenever I get in this car, I relax totally, and a smile comes on my face, and I'm always greeted with smiles from the public. Kids swarm around the car. They're always laughing and pointing at the car. Of course, they will yell out, "Mr. Bean," or they make a comment about the squirrels. Do I have to feed the squirrels that run it? And of course, I find the most derogatory remark about the car is when people use that C word and call it a clown car. And that I take great offense to.
You're listening to the Cape and Islands NPR stations.
People always say, "That's a clown car." Don't say that. It's not. This is a high-performance racing vehicle.
You're listening to The Point. We're talking about spasticity and treatment options with Dr. Scott Abramson, specialist in physical medicine and rehabilitation at Spalding Rehabilitation, and Barbara Kimmy, a physical therapist specializing in neurorehabilitation, also at Spalding. Sometimes people with Parkinson's can develop tremors. Is that a form of spasticity, and can it be treated?
It can. People with Parkinson's can get what we call a dystonia. And dystonia, as I talked about earlier, is sort of like a sister, a cousin to spasticity, where it's, again, unwanted movements of certain muscles. So the generalized tremors, no, we don't treat with Botox or do an intervention like that. But some people get these focal areas where certain muscles are really quite active, or what we call dystonic. We can treat with the Botox and sort of isolate out. So one of our colleagues is a neurologist who runs a Parkinson's clinic through Spalding, and sometimes we'll work in collaboration to treat patients that have certain muscles that are involved. For example, we had a patient recently whose great toe, her big toe, and would elevate spontaneously, just sort of unwantedly. And her husband, to accommodate this over the last couple of years, had cut out big holes in all of her shoes so that the toe can go through, because it was so bothersome. It was breaking down the skin on her great toe. She was in our hospital for a different reason, and one of the therapists picked up on this and asked me to come see this patient. And it was a great intervention that we were able to do, because I was able to isolate out that muscle that was involved. We were able to give it the injection with the Botox. I saw her back just a couple of days ago, and her toe is now sitting quite nicely down inside in a normal pair of shoes.
So. Wow. It's really amazing. Many of our listeners are, of course, fans of Diane Rehm, who has a neurological disorder. And I don't even know if I can say it. It's spasmodic dysphonia. Did I say that right? I don't even know. She undergoes regular voice treatments that are Botox injections into her vocal cords. I know you can't speak to her particular disorder, but in instances where speech is impacted by a stroke or other neurological disorders, is this treatment the same? I'm like, what with Diane?
Same type of thing. It's all muscle involved. And so whether it's you can do Botox, you can do it into the vocal cords, you can actually do it into the bladder.
Really?
For people who have a spastic bladder. And again, same mechanism of injury, whether a neurological disorder causing unwanted muscle contraction. So it has FDA approval to treat spastic bladder as well.
Mm-hmm. So you can really have this anywhere in your body then?
And it's the new Prozac. You can do it. You can do it anywhere.
Wow. Yeah. Barbara, what is Bioness?
Bioness is fairly new technology in the last 6 to 8 years that delivers electrical stimulation specifically to muscles to produce a contraction, such as if you had a foot drop. And as we talked earlier, if you have spasticity so that the foot points down and you can't walk, the physiatrist can inject Botox, so then we can stretch the ankle. So now you have a movable ankle. But if the muscles don't contract sufficiently, one of two things can happen. You can either have a brace put on your leg, which is a very static form to have a normal gait pattern, or you can try what's called the Bioness L300, which is electrical stimulation with a shoe sensor or heel sensor that mimics your normal gait pattern.
Hmm.
So it's a way to strengthen the muscles to pull the foot up, to clear the toes.
But you may still have that even when you go through this. Is that temporary? Or
We are finding some carryover where there's maybe half hour without the Bioness on, that people are having carryover of being able to pick the foot up.
So basically, this is really just to keep those muscles in tone and all that. So
And it will also help to stretch, so you won't get those contractures.
Wow. Okay.
So once the physiatrists loosen things up, that we can stretch and we can take it further to promote function.
Drop foot's that's a common ailment. A lot of people and is that treated with Botox?
Depends on the cause. If the
because a lot of it is it Parkinson's that
you can get it with. You can get with a herniated disc can damage a nerve that causes drop foot, and that's probably the most common. And that is not treatable because that's what we call a lower motor neuron. The nerve damage is outside of the spinal cord. But if it's from a stroke or a brain injury or spinal cord injury, it can be treated this way.
Oh, so again, depends on the injury. Right?
Correct.
What about children? Do we see spasticity in children? Is the treatment the same?
Treatment is similar. We mostly the cause is going to be cerebral palsy is the primary cause for spasticity in the pediatric population. It's treated with the same type of approach, and sometimes, but with Botox, you have to be more careful because you have a smaller person, and so there are dose adjustments that have to be made. And again, with sort of the more general spasticity, it's harder to treat with Botox associated with CP.
Do you, you know, you mentioned people raise the eyebrows when you say, "Oh, we're going to treat this with some Botox," and you know, when you botulism, you know, do you people go, "I don't know, I don't know if I want to have Botox in my system," especially if you tell me I have to have it four times a year.
Correct. We get some people that we bring it up. We try to educate them, and no matter what you say, they're not interested. But most of the time, if we take the time and we educate them, we give them some information to go home and read about, and just from a personal experience, and I can tell them how many patients that we've worked with, and you know, for through the years, I'll often say just give it one try. Let's see what happens with one attempt. And see what kind of functional difference that you pick up on.
Yeah, I would also imagine anybody living with chronic pain, you'll do anything to get rid of that pain, won't you?
Correct. Yeah. But we don't want to just sell them. We're not going to sell them. You know, we want to make sure that's something that would be helpful. Yes.
Yeah. So when somebody has this, I'm just thinking of how painful a muscle spasm is, and you're saying some people have this can go on all day. In addition to the Botox, are they treated with other medications? I mean, I would imagine there's some pain management involved in this as well.
Correct. And we'll often, one of the, when we talked about the one that gets implanted, baclofen. So baclofen is something that we'll often use as an oral medication as well. In that one, and there's a couple others that we'll try to utilize. And sometimes when it's mild, that's for sure the first thing that'll go to, that in combination with the therapy and bracing to get everything, you know, sort of that's the most conservative approach and often the initial approach that we'll use. And it's just, you know, a lot of people can't tolerate some of these medications, and the tough part about the oral medications is that the medication doesn't know which muscles or so are spastic. It'll relax the more spastic ones, but at the same time, it also may relax some of the other muscles. So between that and some of the effects that it may have on sedation, you have to be careful with the medications.
Barbara, when we have some mild cases, are there? And if you get this early, can you treat it just with physical therapy?
Quite often we can, using heat and, again, as I mentioned, the education for the stretching and strengthening the opposing muscle groups and incorporating that into function.
Right. So another reason to try to get it early.
Correct.
Yeah. And again, but it doesn't, you can never get rid of it completely.
Most likely not. It will be with you, but our goal is to obviously make it as least invasive as possible.
You mentioned earlier that people with brain and spinal cord injuries can also benefit from this therapy, and you described some cases where you've been able to ease spasticity in these instances?
Sure. You know, we've had a number of experiences, and oftentimes Barb and I will work together on some of these patients where Barb may send a patient down and say, "Hey, Scott, we've got this lady, and she's got a foot drop, and we're really trying to get her to help clear her foot." And that's the whole key with the foot drop. So we've got a number of patients that we've worked with together, and that's really one of the simplest, most effective, you know, populations that we could deal with is the foot drop population. And so it's a very simple injection that I'll work with and go after the calf muscles and some of the other muscles that are making that foot go down uncontrollably. And so Barb and I will work with those patients, and I'll inject them and then have them go back, as Barb said, about 2 weeks is when it really kicks in. It's really sort of at its best level in terms of the medication really acting, and then she can get in there and really work on strengthening the opposite muscle. And that's the key part, is that you're strengthening the muscle that can't work when because the other muscle is so spastic, so we call the antagonist the opposite muscle, and she'll get in there and try to work
on it. I was just thinking, if you've got some muscles not working, they kind of tug on other muscles and create problems in other parts of the body, right? I mean, you know, you have something that's happening in your hip, but now you have a back problem because of muscles not working the way they're supposed to.
Well, just think, if you have a foot drop, in order to clear the foot, you have to hike the hip and swing the leg out to the side, and that affects your back, so it's a chain of events.
Right. So again, the message here, if you think you have an issue, get to it early, right? Get to your and talk to your primary care physician. And we'll have a link to your website up on our website. Dr. Scott Abramson, specialist in physical medicine and rehabilitation at Spalding, and Barbara Kimmy, physical therapist specializing in neurorehabilitation. Thanks for bringing this to our attention. I'm sure a lot of folks like me didn't know what it was before. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vins produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.